Welcome to the Thruer podcast, where we share stories from long-distance hikers all over the world. We also share tips, tricks, and specialized subject matter to help aspiring long-distance hikers prepare for trail. I'm your host, Carol Cheer Coyne. I'm a triple crowner and the founder of a long-distance hiking community called Thruer, which is short for Thru Hiker. If you'd like to get involved with the Thruer community, you can start at our website at www.thruer.com. That's www.thru-r.com. Before we get into it, we'd like to thank our sponsor and partner for this episode, Sawyer. Sawyer is more than an outdoor company with their Clean Water for All initiative, as well as aiding in disaster relief all over the globe. They also happen to sell amazing products approved by thru-hikers everywhere. And I can attest to their quality using their bug protection, sunscreen, and of course, their Sawyer Squeeze on my Triple Crown journey. You can explore their products, read about their amazing initiatives, and donate to the Sawyer Foundation at their website at www.sawyer.com. Today, we welcome Adam Salinger, or Dreamer, onto the podcast. In this Q&A, we talk about UL hiking, gear hacks, a run-in with grizzly bears and a wolf, thoughts on authenticity in the thru-hiking space, and we also go into his venture called Alpine Adventure Coaching. I'd connected with Dreamer early on, probably even before my Appalachian Trail hike, and I was so excited to meet with him in more in quotes in person or over Zoom to get to know him better. And we really dive into a lot of great hiker-centric topics on this episode. So stick around. This conversation was a lot of fun. Adam, or Dreamer, welcome to the Thruer podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we're so happy to talk to you about the many thru hikes that you've done, including the AT, JMT, Colorado Trail was your most recent hike, so we can get into that. And you are also the founder of Alpine Adventure Coaching, so we really want to dive deep into that as well, if you're willing to share all of the things. So again, so excited to talk to you, and we're going to have you get an intro, and then we'll get into our rapid fire questions and our 10 main questions we ask every experienced thru hiker. So with that, why don't you tell our audience who you are, what specifically, maybe all the trails, whatever you want to share with everybody.
Great. Well, my name's Adam. Like you said, Adam Salinger. My trail name is Dreamer. I'm from Sacramento, California. So the Eastern Sierras are kind of my playground and always have been. In terms of long distance hikes, a lot of official trails and then a lot of routes that I've created myself in the Sierras. So it started really with the Appalachian Trail in 2000. Which is a long time ago, back before cell phones, believe it or not. A couple through hikes of the John Muir Trail, once in 2001, right after the AT, and then once in 2013 again. The Tahoe Rim Trail in 2002, the Wonderland Trail in 2005, and then a couple different times I've put together all the trails on the top rim of Yosemite and circumnavigated that. So I did that another year, which was great. I've hiked the Ruby Crest Trail, which runs through Ruby Mountains in Nevada. The Lost Coast Trail, probably 10 times at least. And then the Colorado Trail is my most recent. And then another couple where I spent 3 weeks in the Brooks Range of Gates of the Arctic National Park and did a ton of day hiking and a ton of backpacking during that time. A friend of mine created a 90-mile loop in the San Diego area down towards you. And I did that last spring break. And then lots and lots and lots of loops and lollipops in the Eastern Sierras, all between 50 and 100 miles. And then my backyard is Desolation Wilderness. So lots of trips from Highway 50 to Highway 80, which are easy drop-offs and pickups for my family and friends in terms of doing that. I started doing it over 4 or 5 days, and the last time I did it over 2 days. So it's kind of my training ground and my fun place to be. So those are kind of all the trails I've done. I'm hoping this summer to do the long trail. That's my goal. Obviously, did part of it on the AT, but like to thru hike the whole thing. And then Bridge to retirement, I'd like to get to all the big trails, the PNT before it gets too busy. And then I'd love to do the PCT, so through my backyard, and the CDT and the GDT and all of them. And little ones like the Mata Hay Trail are really interesting to me through North Dakota and the Badlands. And then piecing in some Camino routes too. I'd love to do some Camino routes as well. So since there's so many of those. So yeah, that's kind of my trail experience.
Awesome. Thank you. And we're both Californians on this call here.
Yes.
So how far, I didn't realize Sacramento was so close to desolation. How far of a drive is that for you?
So I'm only about an hour and 15 to an hour and 25 minutes on either side of where the PCT hits either one of those highways. So it's really easy for me to get into the backcountry on either side. And then Desolation, I can actually get to the backside of Desolation, I can be to within 45 minutes. Which is absolutely amazing. And it's kind of a dream to be able to get up into the high mountains, and have that Eastern Sierra feel like kind of in my backyard. So it's great. It's great.
Awesome. Yeah. I think the closest point on the PCT to me is Scissors Crossing, and that's about like an hour or
Yeah.
something without traffic.
Right.
You know what that
Right.
means. So yeah, we're about kind of equidistant from the PCT specifically. Yeah, and I'm really, you mentioned that you created your own routes in the Sierra. That is so
Yeah.
interesting. And I saw you did the Sierra High Route, so you're like a Sierra guy. Do you want to talk about Alpine Adventure Coaching now, or should we leave that till the end?
Well, I can introduce it. Absolutely.
Yeah, tell us about that.
I started a company not too long ago called Alpine Adventure Coaching to really work with long distance through hikers. Our mission is to empower future long distance hikers with the critical skills and everything that they need, confidence to plan and prepare and safely complete outdoor journeys that have tons of challenges, and kind of getting ready for lots of those challenges, the physical, the emotional challenges, and the mental challenges that go into long distance hikes. So it's been fun so far, and kind of offer a myriad of things, and I can get into those a little bit later, but the company's off the ground, and it's been a lot of fun to work with different clients and in different ways for different reasons and kind of meet their needs. I love data. I'm a data geek, so diving into the data of a trail, whether I've hiked it or not, is always a ton of fun for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. We're excited to learn more about that after we go through the main questions. We can dive deeper. So excited for that. But before we go into that, obviously, we'll get into the rapid fire question. So the first one we would love to hear from you is, what is the grossest thing you did or ate while on trail?
I've spent, 25, 30 years on trail. I'm thinking about the grossest things. I think the grossest things would not be that gross to thru hikers, but they would be very gross to the regular Joe on the street, right? So probably on the AT, and I don't remember what little town it was, but being in a restaurant where there were a group of hikers, myself eating at a table, and the people at the table next to us left and left plates of food, and those plates of food were then my food. Right. So those are kind of, I mean, thru hiker specials, but for non-thru hikers, yeah, that would be kind of gross, I think.
You are not the first person who said that.
I'm sure I'm not. Like I said, very, very, I think it's pretty average for a thru hiker. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Oh, I love it. Okay. Next rapid fire, UL or don't care.
UL within reason. My pack weight's down well below 10 right now, but I carry a lot of things that people would say were luxuries within that 10. So UL.
Can I ask what? Well, we could get into this later with gear, but
Sure.
can we go over your luxury items at some point during
Oh,
this session?
absolutely.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
let's get into that when we talk about gear, because I'm
Yes.
oh, actually, you're one of the few, somewhat UL people that have gotten on the show. So I haven't talked to a lot of ultralighters. So I'm
Okay.
just like, okay, what's the luxury
Yeah,
you
let's
bring? And
dive
what
in.
do you,
Absolutely.
yeah, so we'll get into that.
Okay.
But first, next rapid fire is boots or trail runners.
Trail runners, for sure. I wore boots forever, like anybody that used to hike forever, like I have, and I had lots of ankle problems, but I fixed those up with lots of PT, and I'm in full trail runner mode now, for sure.
Do you have a brand of choice, type of
I
key?
have moved from ultras to topos, and I'm really excited with topos. I really like the cushioning. It's kind of like walking on a cloud after walking in ultras for a few years. So I'm really enjoying it. Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, they're great shoes. Okay.
Stove or cold soak?
I have been stove most of my backpacking time, except for I did the JMT in 7 days way back when, in 2013, and I did that cold soak and stoveless. But this summer kind of made the promise to myself I want to move into cold soaking on my long distance hikes. My best friend is a chef, and he and I have been working on 3 to 4 really solid cold soak recipes that actually taste good. And that I can cycle through on a 2 to 3 week long hike. So definitely moving towards cold soak. Yeah.
Are you going to share those recipes with your Alpine adventure coach
I
class?
am going to share those
Nice.
recipes with my class. Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
There's
One of the
a perk.
perks. It
Yes,
is a perk.
huge perk.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's great. All right, let's get into the 10 questions that we ask every experienced thru hiker on the show. So the first one is, we know your trail name is Dreamer. How did you get that trail name?
I started going to summer camp in when I was 8 years old. My grandma sent me away to summer camp, and at the summer camp that I went to, my parents were from the East Coast, so they sent kids away for the entire summer to summer camp. West Coast, there really aren't summer camps where you can send your kid all summer, but my parents found a camp that had 5 sessions that lasted the whole summer. So they sent me to all 5 sessions, and I went the whole summer. And every session had a backpacking trip. So I started really getting into backpacking when I was 8. And in the lodge, there was a an old like 1971 National Geographic book on the Appalachian Trail, and I fell in love with it. So hiking the AT had always been a dream of mine. My whole life it had been a dream, and it never really made sense timing wise to do it until I was about 30. So I went out there as a dreamer, and then I also, ironically, I was one of the only Californians on the trail that year. There were very few West Coasters, I guess, that year. So the name fit perfectly for that reason too. So I've been Dreamer ever since.
Perfect. All right. So this next question, you kind of already answered it, but if you want to expand on that, what drew you to long distance hiking? So you said, the summer camps, you saw the National Geographic, AT. So that really is probably what drew you to it, right? That's
Yeah, I had at that summer camp, I had great counselors, and in terms of kind of letting us experience being outdoors, they did a really good job of letting us experience it in our own way. And it was kind of the first time I had ever had those true feelings of awe, I guess. I hadn't You live in the city and you might have one of those every now and then, but to be able to have them daily and hourly in the backcountry just kind of blew my mind. So I was kind of addicted to that feeling of awe, which just kept bringing me back to the trail. Like, and I didn't have a lot of choice as a kid. I just went to summer camp and I got to backpack 5 times a summer. But as soon as, I was old enough to start driving and start exploring myself, I was doing that in addition to doing it at camp. And then once camp ended, when I was about 19, then I just started exploring myself. But I always kind of, again, kind of addicted to that feeling of awe that you see an eagle fly across the sky above you, and it's so different than what you notice in the front country the majority of the time. So yeah, it was that for sure.
Yeah, it's funny. For some people, it's like a moment, where they, or some people, it's kind of a gradual thing where it builds and then they're like, oh, yeah, of course I need
Yes.
the AT or the
Yes.
PCT or CDT. We're going to get into gear now. So I'm excited
Okay.
about this one. So, what are your favorite and least favorite pieces of gear? Maybe the least favorite is something you got rid of right away, or when you were younger, you carried, and then as you got older, maybe, okay, why am I carrying this? And then I do want to get into your luxury items currently too.
I'll start with my least favorite because you started there, but it's not what I was able to get rid of. It's what I still have to carry so much of the time, and that's a bear canister. My home backpacking turf is the Eastern Sierras, and so much of where I go requires a bear canister. And even though I have, my wife got me a fancy barricade a number of years ago, which weighs a little bit less, it's still the same bulk. And I can't stand it, no matter how many times I carry a bear canister. And there are many trips, lollipops and loops that I plan in the Eastern Sierras that almost skirt some of those bear canister required areas, so that I actually don't have to carry one, and I can carry an ursac instead. That's definitely my least favorite piece of gear by leaps and bounds. And then my most favorite, My most favorite pieces of gear are the ones that I either make or kind of cannibalize from other pieces of gear. But for me, the thing I like least doing in the backcountry is blowing up an air mattress. So what I do is I actually cannibalize those, what I think of as useless bags that come for your Therm-a-Rest or for your Nemo, especially the Nemo, because it's got that little small air entry that you can't use as a stuff sack. And I actually cut the valve off, and then I tape the valve onto the bottom of a garbage bag and use that as my pack liner. And then since I'm cowboy camping the majority of the time, I like to keep my backpack inside of that same bag at night, just to keep the dew off of it, maybe to keep it a little bit cleaner. So I've kind of done that for all the sleeping pads that I own. I've pulled that valve off of the manufacturer bag and I just tape it. I use duct tape and I tape it to a garbage bag. And then if the garbage bag springs a hole, I just pull the valve back off and put it on another one. So that's my favorite piece of gear, because it's multi-use and light and easy, and then I don't have to blow up air mattress, which is my least favorite. Yeah.
Right. And you created it yourself. Like, this was all you engineering this.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. And I can use any garbage bag I want, obviously. And I use different size garbage bag for different packs. But it works, and it works for multiple things. And then I'm not carrying around a blow bag for the manufacturer that I really can't use for anything else. So yep, that's my favorite.
Nice. And I'm guessing there might be a play-by-play in your program, possibly, about setting this up.
Hacks. Yeah, great. Hacks. Hiker hacks. Yeah. Using pieces of gear for multiple purposes. Absolutely. Those are some of my favorite things to do. Favorite things to do with gear. I mean, another one I use that I throw into my course is I use a feathered friend sleeping bag, but I have sewn on quilt tabs onto either end and bought straps. And about 50% of the time I use it as a quilt, and about 50% of the time I use it as a sleeping bag. So it's nice to be able to completely zip up. And at the same time, it's nice on the warmer nights to be able to open it up and use it as a quilt. And I've got a warmer bag too, and a warmer quilt for warmer weather, but to have that kind of, have those options for one piece of gear. Yeah, that's what I'm all about. Lots of options.
Nice. Love the innovation.
Yeah.
So great. So let's get into what luxury items are you carrying?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, everybody's definition, I guess, of luxury is different, right? But I think most people would agree, or most hikers would agree, that that a long, wide sleeping pad is a luxury item. And that's what I've got. I've got a long, wide Nemo sleeping pad, because I find that I sleep so much better on a long, wide. I'm a stomach sleeper, and my arms are above my head a lot of the time. So it gives me room to make sure I'm completely on the pad, which is great, and which I love. And like I said, some people may call that luxury and some people may not. I can still get my backpack to, 8-9 pounds, even with that, which is, ends up being one of the heavier items in my pack for sure at that point. So that's definitely a luxury item. On anything that's not a kind of a fast pack, long distance hike, I like to carry a chair as well. So, my chair is only, I think, 19 ounces. So I really enjoy a chair. I don't carry a chair when I'm trying to make, 30 to 40 mile days, but especially if I'm with other people, I'm hiking with other people and spending time with other people in the mountains, I love to have a chair as a luxury item. So, and I kind of look at, my other piece of luxury that I look at, and again, lots of people wouldn't look at it as luxury, but a stove. I mean, for me, a stove is kind of luxury. Having hot coffee instead of cold coffee is a luxury in my mind. I can live on cold coffee out there, but having hot coffee is sure nice, especially when the weather starts, turning into a shoulder season. But yeah, I think those are some of my main ones. I use a Dyneema Z-Pack stuff sack that has a felt side for a pillow. So I do use a pillow. Some people are going to look at that as a luxury item for sure. I've never carried a blow up pillow. I don't really like the way those feel, but I kind of need an upgrade from stuffing all my stuff, my clothes in a buff or something like that. So that's, I think luxury is kind of all in the eye of the beholder in terms of what, especially what more seasoned hikers are kind of looking at being luxuries versus, you know, necessities. So
yes, they're definitely a gray area with a lot of definitions in the long distance hiking world too. Not just, you know, not just luxury. It's so many other things. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's in the eye of the beholder, whether you're a beginner, experienced, ultralight, you know, we do have different definitions of that. But yeah, I was just very interested in, you know, what you had. So, and to me, like, I'm not an ultralighter at all. You know, having a stove is like, for me, that's not a luxury item. That's just like normal. Like,
right, well, right.
Everybody carries right. it, right? But for you, yeah. you know, with a really low base weight, that's a luxury yeah. for you. And a pillow.
Yeah.
Like, for me, yeah. that's standard. But for you, it's like you have to choose. You have to be careful about what you're carrying. So,
yeah. Yep. Yeah. And a tent to me a lot of the time is a luxury item too. I've been cowboy camping most of my life. I have a Nemo Hornet that I carry when I believe I'll need it for conditions, or if I'm doing a trip with friends and we're kind of base camping and doing some day hiking, that makes sense more to bring the Hornet. But when I'm on my own, for a lot of years I had a Z-Pax Hexamid tarp. And that was very minimalist at less than 6 ounces. And now I've moved up to using, a sling fin, tarp, a small company out of Berkeley. And I think the tarp itself is like 7 ounces, and then you can integrate different things to the tarp. It's kind of an interesting piece. You can integrate a bug net that goes on the inside. I don't use that. You can integrate a vestibule that closes it up, and then it's completely closed all the way along. And you can integrate a footprint too. So I think that whole setup for me on the Colorado Trail was 13 ounces for the entire setup with the stakes. So still under a pound for that. But I usually don't use it unless I'm dealing with weather. Otherwise, I'm sleeping out for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're a cowboy camper. How many times have you had to like set up your tent in the middle of the night? Because it was like,
yeah. So I'm a cowboy camper within reason as well. I mean, I'm a cowboy camper, but with that said, a number of years ago, I decided that cowboy camping for me was going to mean that I was going to get a Bora bivy. It's another small cottage company. And I was just not going to zip the top closed ever, but I was going to use it for an extra 5, 6, 7 degrees of warmth to cut the wind. And to keep the dew off of me also. I did part of the Condor Trail about a year ago, and was just 2 years ago, and was just covered in dew every single morning. So that was kind of the impetus for that. But in terms of setting it up at night, so there were 3 nights on my Colorado Trail trip this summer that I had to set my tarp up, and 2 of those 3 nights I had to set it up in the middle of the night because I felt drip drop on the bivy itself. But I can get my tarp set up in less than a minute for sure. So it's pretty easy to do. If I can cowboy camp, it is what I will choose to do all the time for sure.
Yeah. For yeah. Sure. In California, that's a lot, you know, that's pretty
yes.
easy versus
yes.
like coast or something.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Nice. Okay, well, thank you for all of the gear talk. We love
yeah.
that on this show. Let's get into memories. So I want to ask you, what is your favorite and worst memory from trail?
My favorite memory is the span of time I had on the Appalachian Trail, which was 23 years ago, with my trail partner, Snoopy. We met briefly on day 1 at the lodge. At the state park, and in both having breakfast, and we didn't see each other again for about a week. And the reason we didn't see each other for a week was because somewhere in the first 2 or 3 days, I took the wrong trail for 4 miles and had to come back 4 miles. So I did 8 miles I didn't have to do, and he got ahead of me. And when we finally met, we hiked together almost every single day, all the way to Port Clinton, where he had to get off. He got injured. But it was, you know, when you spend that much time on a trail with somebody, it's a special friendship, and it's as strong now, 23 years ago, as it was then. He lives in Maine. I live in California, and we've seen each other a couple times, and we talk as much as we can. And that's definitely my favorite memory from the trail. My worst memory from the trail, I was thinking about this. I think it's also from the AT, and I think it's actually from some of the area in terms of following your journey this summer that you really struggled too. And it was, I'd had some rough weather in the Whites. The Whites threw everything they could at me. And I remember I got to Pinkham Notch Visitor Center and I went inside to try to get warmed up and dried off. And I couldn't get too warm and I couldn't get too dry. And I was just dreading the miles that were ahead of me for the rest of the day. And I remember this so well. I walked out of the visitor center and I was just cussing to myself. Just, I was so unhappy. And I was literally dragging my trekking poles behind me on the asphalt pavement. And I heard from behind me, some guy said, "That guy should go home." And to this, I didn't turn around. I didn't change my pace. I didn't pick up my poles. I kept dragging my poles. And, but that person's comment was part of the motivation I needed to kind of get me back in the game and get me back into a mindset of trying to have unconditional enjoyment of the trail every day, not putting my expectations onto the trail for how the weather should be or how my body should feel or any of that, and just trying to get back to enjoying it. And it was still, it was a tiring and trying last part of the trail for me, but that was the impetus for me kind of kicking myself back into gear. That was a rough one. And to this day, I wonder if that guy will be listening to this podcast and he'll hear that and say, "I remember saying that." Yeah, that was the worst. And it was also, I guess, one of the best in terms of how it turned out, but it was the worst at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny how that works, but it's great that you let kind of, obviously a very negative comment propel you forward to finish the trail.
Yeah, it was rough.
It would be. I mean, we kind of had a similar experience, it sounds like, in the way. Yeah, if I overheard somebody saying that about me, that would crush me.
Oh, it did crush me. It did crush me. You're that many miles in, you've done that much. And yeah, it crushed me. It crushed me, but it was probably what I needed at the time. It really was.
I mean,
so
trail provides, and sometimes it's one of those things like,
right,
buck up and keep going.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's what it was for me at the time.
Let's move into your scariest moment from trail.
So I haven't had a lot of really scary moments on trail other than the lightning. Lightning encounters have been very scary. I was near an area on the AT where four people were struck by a ground strike. And then I've had really scary experiences on other ridges and other places in the country, including the Colorado Trail, the John Muir, lots in the Sierra. So lightning has been one of the big ones, but the scariest thing I think for me was a few summers ago, I was in Gates of the Arctic National Park in Alaska, and we were floating down the Noatek River, and we were base camping at every tributary and backpacking deep into these tributaries where, I mean, there was nobody at all. We didn't actually see anybody for 3 weeks. We didn't see another human being for 3 weeks. It was like the only place on the planet I can kind of imagine that happening. But we were actually kind of blessed, and it was the middle of COVID, and we happened to get in, and it worked out. But so we're in this canyon, and we're hiking in this canyon, and we look up, and up on the side of the canyon, there are two grizzly bears that are kind of taking turns back and forth, and they're chasing a wolf. And they're trying to get the wolf, it appears, out of their territory. And the buddy of mine and I that were backpacking, we were, a lot of the time it was easier to walk in the water. So we were actually in this tributary, just watching, and the wolf would run, and the bears would charge it. And the wolf was almost playing with the bears. It was pretty comical, and it was pretty entertaining, and there was no anxiety on our parts because it felt like it was so far away. But at some point in that short time, the wolf changed direction and it started running down the canyon wall straight at where we were, with both bears in full 100% pursuit of this wolf. And we kind of froze for a minute, and then my buddy said, "Let's go." And we started moving as fast as we could in the water downstream, watching them come directly at us. And they closed the distance in just seconds. And they were extremely close. And then all of a sudden the wolf changed direction and started running upstream, and the bears luckily followed the wolf. But we talked about that experience. I was only on like day four of the 20 days. And we talked about that experience the rest of the trip. And we were pretty sure that if the bears had seen us, they probably would have given up their chase at the wolf and just taken all that rage and come straight at us. And we saw other grizzly bears on that trip and other wolves on that trip, but never had any other scary interactions. But that was, it's terrifying. It's terrifying when you have a wolf and two full-size grizzly bear running straight at you and they're 200 yards away, and then you blink and they're 75 yards away. It was terrifying. That was the one.
That sounds real scary. So yeah, sounds like the one. Wow.
It was.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's move on to food. So this is not as intense.
Okay, good.
Where and what was your best town meal?
I've had a lot of good town meals, like we all have.
Hard to choose.
Yeah, it is. I think one of my best meals, and I think it was circumstantial. I had a really rough day. It was also AT. I'd come over Dragon's Tooth, and it was pouring on us all day, and then it stopped raining, and we took our pack covers off our bags, and we kind of stretched out and hung out and started walking again. And all of a sudden I realized that the back of my legs were starting to feel wet, and I inadvertently somehow didn't close the water bladder in my backpack, and everything in my backpack was soaking wet. So we came off of Dragon's Tooth, and at the time, I think they closed a few years ago, was the Home Place in Catawba, Virginia, this big old Victorian house. And it was kind of dubbed as, there wasn't a lot to order. You chose a meat and then you had your sides. And I didn't eat meat at the time. I still don't. So they just loaded me up on all the sides. It was like all I could eat: biscuits and potatoes and beans and corn and bowl after bowl of ice cream. And it was just, I think it was more circumstantial as well, being with some good friends that I'd had a tough day with. And then the storm came back and they let us sleep on their porch. So we slept on their covered porch. And that was a great, great food and friend memory, I think.
How about on trail? So what's your favorite meal to prepare on trail?
I make all my own dinners. I dehydrate all my own food, and I kind of have like five meals that I roll through. I like them all. They're all good. I'm looking forward to the cold soaked meals and kind of getting that going. But I think my ultimate favorite food, and I can only do this on the AT. I hope someday when I retire and I can hike some long trails again, I can do it again. But I had fresh sprouts with me every single day on the Appalachian Trail. I carried two peanut butter containers, and one was always growing and one was always ready to eat. And I rinsed them every night, and I switched between corn and radish, and I had fresh sprouts every single day. And I ate a lot of hummus that trip, and I had a lot of sprouts and a lot of cheese and tortillas. But just getting to have fresh greens on a daily basis was magical. Was amazing. So I think the sprouts were kind of my favorite. I'd like to get back on a trail that is long enough for me to be able to do that again. I thought about doing it on the Colorado Trail this summer, but I was too kind of focused on miles to do that. But maybe someday again. But the sprouts were amazing.
That sounds so nice, because you know, usually you don't get fresh food until you get into town, and maybe you pack some out that lasts for a day or two, or maybe three. Not every day. So that sounds great.
It was amazing. The other best trail food, though, and I mentioned this to you a couple of days ago, is always packing a pizza out of town. Always. Every time I hit town, I always have a big Ziploc bag and I pack an entire pizza out, and it's gone within a day, day and a half. And it's just so nice to have, you know, cold pizza is just great no matter what. And cold pizza on the trail is pretty amazing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Another luxurious thing to pack.
Yes.
Out.
Yes.
So new hikers listening, take note. Pizza, pack it out.
Pizza, pack it out every time.
Let's get into kind of like relationships on trail. So what was the nicest thing someone did for you on trail or in town? So it could be a trail angel, another hiker.
I've had a lot of trail magic over the years, and it looks so different now than it did 25 years ago. Trail magic is something that has really evolved and looks very different, and it's kind of more structured almost now. And I think sometimes hikers expect it a bit too much even nowadays compared to way back when. I think the spontaneous stuff is the best. This summer while I was on the Colorado Trail, I came out at the Molis Pass Trailhead. And I had been told that there was a snack bar at the campground a few miles down the road. I did not want to walk it. So I told myself I would try to hitchhike and I would give myself 20 minutes to hitchhike. So it had been 14, 15, 16 minutes. And this older couple walked across the road from their RV, which they had kind of tucked into this little open area. And they just had a, they opened up a conversation, you know, where are you going? What are you doing? They had never really heard of the Colorado Trail or through hiking or any of that. And they were kind of fascinated. And then they said, well, have a great time. And they continued to walk past me and they walked about 25 yards. And then they came back to me and they said, you know what? We've got some snacks in our RV. Would you like some snacks if you can't get a ride? And I said, sure. So I said, but I'm going to keep trying to get a ride right here. I said, you know, if you're back, I'd love to have that. So they went back across the road and they came back with 7 or 8 scrumptious little frozen peanut butter balls and like 5 cuties, and then some great conversation. They walked me back to the trail and I had those goodies for the rest of my day. And it was so spontaneous, that it felt that much more special. Tara and Tom were their names, and they lived in some small town in Colorado and were just kind of moving around and vacationing. But I think that's the nicest stuff, I think, is when it's that spontaneous. Trail angels are amazing. And don't get me wrong, I had some women this summer that set up on the Colorado Trail for 11 days and made all you could eat pancakes for hikers. And they had 500 gallons of water in a section that had very little water, and they had this huge water tank, and that stuff is amazing and terrific, and I'm so grateful for that, and they were so sweet. But that spontaneous kind of thing really just kind of blows your mind when somebody just stops everything they're doing and they want to know and they want to help. It's kind of a beautiful thing.
It really is. Yeah. And these, yeah. This is actually my favorite question I ask everybody, because it's just, there are kind people out there, and there may be more than you think. And so, yeah, like when I was on my treks, there's just kindness everywhere. You'll find it on a long trail. That's for sure.
You will, like, especially if you kind of keep yourself open to it. You will find it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And the spontaneous thing too is interesting. Those are some of my favorite trail moments too. It's like something simple, like a piece of fruit that someone's hiking. They're just having some fruit, and that could change your day. All right, we're getting into the philosophical side of things now. So what was the greatest lesson you've learned while hiking?
I think the greatest lesson I learned while backpacking was something that I'm always kind of striving for in the front country and the back country, but I'm better at in the back country. And it comes from, I don't know if you've ever heard of Phil Stutz. There's a movie about him actually on Netflix called Stutz, where Jonah Hill is interviewing him. And he's a trained psychologist. Psychiatrist, and he's got these tools that he uses and teaches to use for situations in everyday life. And one of them has kind of a silly name. It's called the reversal of desire, I think. And it's basically the theory of leaning into fear and pain. It's leaning into the feelings of fear and pain and actually starting to desire not the situations that cause the fear and pain, but the actual fear and pain, at an aim of kind of channeling that energy into forward motion and growth, right? You move through these things, you learn from these things. I think for all of us, it's really tempting to focus on all the possible negative outcomes from some kind of event, like all these things that might happen. But focusing kind of on the present moment and not all those possible terrible things that might have and the sensation of that fear and pain rather than the events, I think makes it easier to kind of start processing it like a different discomfort, like just being hungry or being cold or any of those things and just moving through those things. I think it lets you kind of shift your mindset and reframe feelings of fear or pain in the backcountry as motivation for growth and for forward motion, and rather than something you want to avoid. My mantra is always like, and I think this came from maybe Phil Stutz, but the mantra is, you know, when all that stuff happens and all that stuff goes down, it's just yelling out, bring it on, right? I'm ready. Bring it on. I'm ready to move through it. So I think I think that that's the biggest lesson, because I've got the most, I think I get the most chance to practice in the backcountry, right? And we were talking about that a little bit, a little while ago, separating, you know, the feelings from, and kind of focusing on that unconditional enjoyment as well. And really trying to not think about all those bad things that could happen, and just think about how you're feeling in that moment. And it again starts just to feel like any kind of discomfort, anything at all. And I think you can move through it a little bit faster and a little bit easier. So I think that's probably the one. It's easier to practice in the backcountry than the front country. And I think I've gotten better at it back there than I am out here in this world. But it's a good one, I think.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good mantra. And
it is.
What better place to practice that than the backcountry?
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, if people are interested in Phil Stutz, I mean, the movie's great. It's just called Stutz. It's on Netflix. And it's a pretty, pretty fascinating movie. And it gives you some insight into this man who is fascinating in his own, because he kind of looks at psychiatry in a different way and has since the 70s than anybody else, in terms of tools in which you use to work through different things in your life. But this one really translates to backpacking, I think, really well. So,
Yes, that's great for especially new hikers too, listening in. And on that note, that's a great piece of advice as well. But do you have any other advice for aspiring through hikers? Big picture advice.
I think one is really, it's what you learn all through school too, right? Focusing on multiple sources when you are researching. I think way too many current day aspiring through hikers focus and use one source, and that's social media. And don't get me wrong, I have no qualms with social media. But I think social media, for the most part, not always, for the most part, just does not convey the full picture of what through hiking is. And I think it takes special people. And I follow lots of through hikers, and there's a handful, you're one of them. There's a handful that are willing to be vulnerable enough to talk about the crappy times and the hard times and the times that they want to quit and the times that they are just physically and mentally exhausted and done. And I think there's not enough of that on social media to use social media as a single source. I think it's really important, even YouTube. I mean, and a lot of the YouTubers are terrific, but a lot of them, they just don't talk about the hardships. So I think multiple sources is really important. Whether that's reading people's full trip blogs, whether it is immersing yourself into a really good through hiking book or a program like mine or like so many others out there. I think that if a through hiker, if somebody who wants to be a through hiker really wants a full picture, they need more than what is on social media. And I saw, and I'm sure you do, and all of us hikers, you know, I was on the Colorado Trail this summer, and within the first 2 days, I saw probably 50 people get off, and they all got off for the same reason. Not one of them was prepared for what was actually going to happen once they got on the trail, whether it was gear or water or nutrition or the physical exhaustion that they would feel. None of them were ready. And I talk to a lot of them because I'm always talking to people in terms of just being interested and also Alpine Adventure coaching. And so many of them just had done nothing except follow one or two people on social media that had done the same thing the year before. So I think the biggest piece of advice for aspiring through hikers would be to use multiple sources when doing that research and really getting a better picture of what they're going to be facing on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Interesting that all those people got off and, you know, they were only following one or two sources. That on social media, it's a rosy picture. It's the highlight reel. Not a lot of people, you're saying, are willing to be vulnerable about, you know what? I wanted to quit today because of this, I'm done, but I'm still staying on, you know, or not. Yep. So it is hard to find people who are willing to admit that.
It is. And I think if you are going to use, you know, social media is one of those multiple sources, that you should do your best to try to find one of those people to find somebody who is being authentic in what they're saying and what they're experiencing out there, I think it's really important. I just read an amazing book by Shyla Paradise. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's a through hiker. And she's a triple crowner, and she just wrote a book that goes through her three hikes, but it's her journal entries, but it's her reflecting years later on those journal entries and basically saying, I wasn't being my authentic self when I wrote this. And here's what I was actually feeling during this particular day or during this particular event, and really able to go back. And I think, you know, she for instance, has really been able to find her authentic self and her vulnerable self. But it's a good reminder for lots of us that so much that's out there is not fully authentic. It doesn't show the whole picture. And I think we need to take that into account. I think new hikers need to take that into account even more so.
Definitely. And diversify your sources. Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's really a great segue into Alpine Adventure Coaching. So I would love to hear more about what you offer in your program, because it sounds like a great way for new hikers and even experienced hikers to learn more. Like, I would love to learn more about the recipes and how to go more ultra light. So this might not even just be for new hikers. This could be for experienced hikers who want to up their game. It sounds
exactly,
like.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it is. It's for a very diverse setup of people that are interested in either learning from the bottom up or up in their game for sure. I mean, and that goes for all the different pieces and parts that I offer. One of the biggest parts that I started offering was a 12-hour virtual class. And there's a number of other classes out there that you can find right now. And a lot of them are recorded video, or mostly recorded video. The 12 hours of virtual interactive curriculum is all live, which the goal is to commit to making sure long distance backpackers are ready with the skills and the confidence they need to hit the trail, right? So everything from picking the trail to the season that you're interested in hiking, and then going through all the mental, physical, and emotional pieces and parts of it too. And I spend a lot of time on those. And I spend a lot of time on gear hacks, and I spend a lot of time on nutrition. But I also spend a lot of time on the mental piece of a long distance hike, because that is the number one reason people end up getting off trail. So the class is a lot of fun in that way. But the other things that I'm working with people on are just as, if not more fun for me. One of the things that I'm working on with people is building a kit, a gear kit with them and for them, that's based around their personal needs, their experience, their hiking style, their budget. I have a very different hiking style than most lots of long distance hikers. I start before sunrise and I end after sunset every single day. But I've also hiked in different ways than that. So I have a lot of experience into what different hiking styles feel like, and gear needs to match that style. So building a kit, as well as, you know, working with more experienced hikers and doing a gear shakedown and really starting to look at each piece of gear, its durability, its performance, its multiple use ability is important to me. So that's a big one. One of the other big ones that I'm working on right now, I'm working with a client in Colorado, which is trip planning. And that's really looking at working with a client to either build an entire trip plan for them or with them. For the gentleman I'm working with right now, he is going to through hike the Colorado Trail in 2025, but he's doing a really interesting he's got an interesting plan in that he's having groups of Boy Scouts join him for 70 to 100 mile sections. So groups of kids that are anywhere from 12 to 14 to 16 to 18. So I'm working with him to plan those sections, to plan, you know, where they're going to camp and the regulations about camping in those areas, to the drop off and pickup points for where those Boy Scouts meet him and his 0 days. And then all the nutrition and the mileage and water availability pieces that go into that and elevation data. So that's a lot of fun for me. And it's that one specifically has been fun right now because I'm working on a trail that I just hiked, which is wonderful because I know that trail like the back of my hand right now. Whereas, you know, to plan somebody's AT, I remember that trail pretty well, but I'd have to dig back in and look at things with them. But it's been a lot of fun in terms of working on data for somebody else because I love digging into data. I just love it. And I love talking to somebody about, you know, how many calories a certain day is going to require based on the number of miles and the amount of elevation they're going to be hiking that day. And then how to look at that food and get the most calories out of the ounces you're carrying, and build a nutritional kit for yourself for a trip. So the trip planning has been another fun one for me in terms of what we're doing at Alpine Adventure Coaching as well. It makes me sad when I see aspiring thru hikers quit after a few days or a week, because they didn't have the information they needed to be successful going forward. And it doesn't mean they had to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on ultralight gear. It just means they needed to be prepared for a diverse set of challenges. And I think that's what I'm excited about. And that's what I love helping people with.
Yeah, I remember as a new hiker myself in 2018, I was researching the PCT. And I didn't know where to go. There wasn't a one-stop shop. You know, you have to go to this blog and that blog and just everybody's different opinions and, you know, trying to diversify my information. So that was really tough. So it would be so nice as a new hiker to have somebody with experience such as yourself to kind of walk through custom walkthrough of here's what you need. Here's the nutrition. Here's a general or really intensive plan of where you're going to be, where you're going to stop. That would be invaluable. So thank you for offering what you do, because I, like I said, I don't feel like, does anybody offer this? I'm not really sure. A lot of it's like video school style or vlog style on YouTube.
Yeah. It's a niche, I think. And I've been told that, and I believe that. And I think a piece of it is that, aspiring thru hikers need to feel like they can trust and like they know this person that's offering this curriculum. So I try to put a lot out on social media, but I'm very willing and open just to having conversations with people who just want to know more about what it looks like, want to know more about me, want to kind of get an idea of my style in terms of teaching, those kinds of things. But yeah, I think it is at this point a niche that I've got. And I'm excited to offer it. And, you know, in a world of social media, it's challenging to get out there and have people know what you're doing. So I'm very appreciative to be on podcasts like yours and a few others that I've been able to be on so that I can reach some different people and let them know what I've got to offer, because I do feel strongly about it. And I do feel like it can really make a difference prior to getting on a trail to have the right information.
Mm-hmm, agreed. Well, thank you again for offering what you do. And I can just tell by your energy, you're so excited about it. And that would translate, you know, to your clients.
Yes. Yes.
Let me ask you this then, where can people follow you? Social media, your website, tell us all the things about where people can find you.
Yeah, all of those things. I'm at Alpine Adventure Coaching on everything, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We've got lots of videos up at this point. People can get a hold of me in any of those ways, but they can also go to the website, which is alpineadventure.com. And there's a ton of information on alpineadventure.com, including some trip blogs, including more information about me, including information specifically about all the services and what they look like, what the modules are within the classes. All of those kinds of things. There's even some start your adventure tips for some pretty common trails that I've added very recently. One for the Colorado Trail, one for the John Muir Trail, and then one for our climbing Mount Whitney from the west, which I've done many, many times and love doing, not only at the end of a John Muir Trail hike, but on loops and lollipops as well. So all of that is at Alpine Adventure Coaching, everything.
Perfect. And for the listeners, we'll put all of those links in the show notes, so you can just click and go straight to, you know, all the things. So thank you again, Dreamer, for coming on. It was so nice getting to know you better, getting to know Alpine Adventure Coaching better, and maybe we'll have you on again to talk about more.
I'd love it. It's always fun. It's always fun. And I look forward to taking part in more through her events as well. I'm excited to become more a part of that community too. It's I think an amazing resource. And I think it's a good platform for aspiring hikers. It's also a great platform for experienced hikers to be able to have a place to connect and build relationships. So I thank you for that as well.
Oh, that means so much. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you for joining me today. If you are an aspiring or an experienced long-distance hiker or a trail angel, I invite you to get involved with our community by starting at our website at www.thrur.com. That's thru-r.com. You can also sign up for our newsletter at the bottom of our website to get all of the latest. If you are enjoying this podcast, please subscribe and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook by using the links in the show notes. It's a great zero-cost way to support us, and please subscribe to us on Spotify and or Apple Podcasts, and you can leave up to a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you have comments or suggestions about topics or guests you'd like to have on this podcast, please email us at info@thrur.com. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Sawyer, for support on this episode. You can check out all of their long-distance hiker-approved products, as well as their amazing conservation initiatives on their website at www.sawyer.com. Thank you so much for listening today, and until next time, happy hiking!